Now, continuing in our pursuit to deny ignorance, the following is a special edition of the ATS Mix. Now, here's Johnny Anonymous.
Welcome, one and all. It is the ATS Mix's special edition, and I am Johnny Anonymous. This is an interview I've wanted to do for a very, very long time. And fortunately, we had a number of members and listeners alike send us in emails and also post their questions on our website at AboveTopSecret.com to ask our guest, the former Ministry of Defense's Deputy Director, Mr. Nick Pope. And I know that you're all just chomping at the bit right now to get right to it. But before we do, let's have this small, brief message, and then we'll get into our interview with Nick Pope.
Good morning, citizen. Your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to go to www.abovepolitics.com. There you will be able to gather up the necessary intel needed to be successfully informed. You'll not only learn what's happening in the U.S., but also in the U.K., Europe, and the world over. We suggest you familiarize yourself with issues such as the economy, military security actions, energy and science, religion, and spiritual influences. It would also be wise to visit the political ideology area to gather up as much information as you can in these areas. General ideology, conservatism, liberalism, socialism, and the moderate. While there, also be sure to check out what others are saying in the Slugfest arena. The intel you gather from Politics of War and the debate forum will be essential in getting into the right mindset on who is a friend or who is a foe. We'd like you to also keep tabs in the candidates area for information as to whom has their sentiments floating either to the right or to the left, as this could prove to be invaluable. I can't stress enough to act in a civil way while at www.abovepolitics.com as to not raise any suspicions as to your true identity and agenda. Good luck with your quest, citizen. This message will now self-destruct.
Well, welcome once again, friends, to the ATS Mix. I am Johnny Anonymous, and of course, we have a very special edition of the ATS Mix, kind of an exclusive, if you will. We're very honored to have with us a very special guest from the United Kingdom. Let me tell you about who I am speaking about. His name is Nick Pope. He was formerly in charge of the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense. Through his research and investigations and having access to formerly classified government files on the subject of UFOs, it soon ended any skepticism he may have still had when taking over the department section. He was convinced that the UFO phenomenon was an important issue, especially when it was backed by witnesses that were military pilots and the fact that there were many cases where UFOs were being tracked on radar. Nick, like most of us, loves good mysteries, and this also includes alien abductions, crop circles, and ghosts. Now working and researching in the private sector, he is recognized worldwide as a leading authority on UFOs and the unexplained. Besides his international lectures and acting as a consultant on numerous television documentaries, he is the author of several books that include Open Skies, Closed Minds, Operation Thunderchild, The Uninvited, Operation Lightning Strike. His website is located at www.nickpope.net, Nick Pope all being one word, and I'd like to invite you to go to his website perhaps while listening to this interview. The ATS Mix is very proud and honored at this time to have with us today Nick Pope. Hello, Nick, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you very much. Great to be on the show.
We want to just let you know, folks, that in our prior setup here, before doing our interview, we had a very unique experience, which maybe someday, maybe when we're on our deathbed, we'll share that recording with everybody. So, Nick, I have to ask you something. Before you actually got involved with the MOD, what was your exposure to UFOs? Was it something of a fascination for you as a child or a teenager?
No, absolutely not. Quite the opposite. And that's, I suppose, what makes it more interesting. I had no prior knowledge about the UFO phenomenon. I had no interest in the mystery at all. When I was asked to do this job, when I was given this basically as my next assignment for the Ministry of Defense, just as another tour of duty, really I said, well, okay, fine, but I have no belief, I have no knowledge, so I really came to this subject cold. And thinking back, that's probably the best way to come to this. I had absolutely no agenda whatsoever.
Well, how did you actually get involved with the MOD in the first place? Did you have family that were in the MOD?
Yes, my father was in the Ministry of Defense. He was very senior, and he suggested, because I had I'd been thinking about going into the law, becoming a lawyer, and that hadn't worked out, and I had changed my mind about a law degree. And my father said, well, look, while you are thinking about what you might want to do instead of a law degree, why don't you just join the Ministry of Defense just to mark time, just while you work out what it is that you want to do. And I did that, and what I couldn't realize at the time, what I didn't realize, is that I was going to end up there and stay there for 21 years, and that's exactly what happened. I think my father had a sneaking suspicion that once I joined, I might get drawn in, just because it is so fascinating. It's just such an amazing place to work. I mean, of course, I love my country. I love working for my country. I love working for my government. Inevitably, I was doing some amazing things, some very, very interesting subjects crossed my desk. I've done some incredible things. I've been some amazing places. It was great.
Well, now, if I understand correctly in what bit of research I was actually able to pull up, I believe it was around 1952 when they actually established a Department for the Proper Investigation for UFO Reports. Is that correct?
It is. They did a study in 1950, which concluded in 1951, but you're absolutely right. In terms of there being a kind of consistent UFO project where the terms of reference were laid down, and where it was look at these sightings, see if there's evidence of anything of any defense significance, that really was, as you say, 1952, and it's run pretty much concurrently to this day. And since that time, the Ministry of Defense has received about 10,000 UFO reports.
Wow.
So we've been pretty busy over the years.
Well, now I'm sure with the conception of that department, there had to be some predecessors that were in charge of the same that you eventually ended up heading up. Did you ever get a chance to talk to any of your predecessors about certain reports or cases?
I spoke to one or two. Now, generally, the policy is that you have to find your own way with these things, and
right,
almost deliberately you are kept apart and you are encouraged not to to liaise. When you take over any post in the Ministry of Defense, you have a very brief handover, but thereafter you have to find your own way, simply because, and I think it's quite a good policy in a way, they don't want people being kind of hamstrung by the past. But I did speak to one or two of my predecessors, one of the most famous of whom is a person called Ralph Noyce, who was actually the head of the division where I was working. But he, years after his involvement, became very, very interested, not just in UFOs, but in the paranormal. And he ended up as honorary chairman of the Center for Crop Circle Studies, the Society for Psychical Research. So from time to time, People at the heart of government who've been touched by this subject, involved with it, do end up becoming very interested.
Give me an idea, because this is how weird my brain works, Nick. But give me an idea of your first day on the job. What on earth was running through your mind?
Okay, I probably thought, what on earth have I gotten into here? let me just give you almost a sort of typical example. The phone would ring, and it would be, for example, a member of the public,
right,
saying, hello, have I gotten through to the Ministry of Defense? And I would say, yes, you have. I would say, what's the issue? And the person would say, well, look, I'm sorry. I hope you don't think I'm wasting your time, and I promise you I'm not mad, but I absolutely, hand on heart, I have had a bizarre experience. I was out last night walking the dog, and I saw a UFO, and it was a massive, diamond-shaped craft, and it was brightly illuminated, and it moved very slowly, and then it shot away to the horizon at a vast speed. Now, you know, you could say, well, you know, so what? But I would get those sorts of calls day in, day out, and sometimes the person would say, look, here are my details. I'm a police officer.
Sure.
Or I'm an Air Force pilot. Or I'm a civil pilot, and I was at 10,000 feet on intermediate approach when this is what I saw. So, you know, I got these sorts of extraordinary experiences relayed to me, but not just from members of the public, but from police, military personnel, civil pilots, military pilots, all sorts.
Well, you know, I was going to ask, you know, what exactly were the protocols and procedures that you had to follow, but you kind of basically touched on that. So I guess let me ask you this. What exactly was the MOD's policy on UFOs? Were they all to be treated as serious?
Yes. The policy was take no preconceived idea, simply go into everything with an open mind. The MOD's only reason for looking at these things is to come to some sort of decision, some sort of judgment as to whether any of them were of any defense significance.
Sure.
In a sense, that's a deliberately vague phrase. I mean, defense significance can mean whatever you want it to mean, to be perfectly honest with you.
Right.
But basically, it's sort of, you know, the way I interpreted it was, is there more to this than just lights in the sky? And if there is, what's going on in our airspace? And
right.
What, if anything, can we do about it?
Well, you know, that brings up my next question, which would be, are there folks in the parliament or the government that believe that these UFOs pose a threat to the Earth?
Yes, there are. Over the years, there really has been, certainly in Britain, and I suspect, looking at the documents that I've looked at, speaking to the people I've spoken to, I suspect in the United States as well, and indeed all over the world, there has been a bit of a sort of what I characterize as a skeptic versus believer debate,
right,
raging at the heart of government and running for the best part of 60 years in a whole load of countries. There have been a lot of people who have thought this whole subject is complete nonsense. But there have been many, many people as well who have thought, hey, this is serious. There is very credible evidence to suggest, both in terms of, for example, credible witnesses like pilots and military personnel, but also radar evidence. You know, there's very credible evidence to suggest that there are some strange objects, phenomena, whatever, operating in our airspace. So over the years, yes, there have been several people, including very senior people, convinced that there's something worth studying here. One of the most passionate believers in this subject, if I can use that term,
sure,
was a former chief of the defense staff, Lord Hill Norton. He was, as I say, former chief of the defense staff. He went on to chair NATO's military committee. So this was really a sort of British equivalent of somebody of the rank and standing, say, of Colin Powell.
Right.
And Lord Hill Norton was a passionate believer that this subject, whatever it was real, it was solid, they were in our airspace, and we needed to take more attention,
sure,
to this phenomenon.
In your personal opinion, Nick, what percentage of reports that came across your desk fell into, well, this can be dismissed as explainable, and this could really be a UFO sighting?
Yes. Broke down pretty much like this. 80% explainable with a fairly high degree of certainty as a misidentification of, you know, all the usual things, aircraft lights, weather balloons, satellites, meteors, and things like that.
Right.
So 80% explained. 15% insufficient data, just not enough information to come to any firm assessment. 5% genuinely unknown. And into those 5% of cases would go the credible sightings from police officers, military personnel, civil and military pilots. Into that 5% would go UFOs tracked on radar. into that 5% would go cases where these things have been photographed or videoed and where the imagery could not be explained in conventional terms by the Ministry of Defence's technical specialists.
Right.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the way it would break down.
Were there any type of pattern consistencies that you found to be prevalent in any of these UFO reports, for example, perhaps dates or geographical areas or maybe even the types of crafts themselves?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and one of the things that I very much tried to do was trend analysis to try and spot those sorts of patterns. It's such an interesting question. I'll take it. I'll actually deal with all of those.
Okay.
Geographically, I had some of my administrative staff go back through the old files and plot out, literally just take a blank map of the United Kingdom and put an X every time there was a UFO sighting.
Okay.
And it was interesting because at the end of the day, what we actually ended up with was what looked very much like a population density map of the United Kingdom. So it transpired that actually there didn't seem to be any particular or particularly unusual UFO hotspots, but we tended to find that in areas of large population density, like London and Manchester and all the big cities, there would be more sightings, perhaps simply because there were more people there to see these things. Huh. So that was the sort of geographical point. In terms of descriptions, yes, very much we did find not the archetypal flying saucer, but this large triangular-shaped UFO that's been seen fairly consistently over the last few years.
Anything to do with dates?
Yes, on dates, we had a very, very interesting situation. One of Britain's most famous UFO cases took place on 30th of March, 1993. We had a massive wave of UFO sightings over the country. We had UFOs seen by police officers, military personnel. We had two military bases directly overflown by a massive triangular-shaped craft seen flying very slow and then accelerating away to the horizon at massive speed. Now, the fascinating thing about this is that it was exactly the same date, i.e. late on the 30th of March, as the very, very famous case in Belgium, where on 30th of March 1990, a UFO had been tracked on radar and where two F-16 fighters had been scrambled to intercept the UFO. So we had this very, very interesting coincidence with date, if it was a coincidence.
One of these events wouldn't be the Cosford incident, would it?
Yes, indeed, yes. The one I'm referring to, the British case, is the so-called Cosford incident. One of the UK, apart from Rendlesham Forest, probably the UK's best-known UFO incident, and you can go on to the Ministry of Defence website, which is literally mod.uk, and you can put the keyword Cosford in, C-O-S-F-O-R-D, and you can find the entire case file on this incident, which runs to over 100 pages of documentation. I led this investigation. This was probably the most high-profile UFO incident that occurred during my tour of duty.
Right.
I mean, it was absolutely fascinating. We had senior politicians and Air Force officers absolutely fascinated by this. People, even complete skeptics, saying, well, I thought this whole UFO thing was nonsense, but what on earth is going on here? And I had very, very senior Ministry of Defence personnel who were complete skeptics in and out of my office on a daily basis after this incident, saying, is there any news on this incident? It's very interesting.
Sure. And that probably clicked a light bulb up to let you know that, there must be something more to this for there to be such an interest garnered for it.
Absolutely. There's no smoke without fire. And I thought, hang on a moment, this is not just all aircraft lights and weather balloons. I said, you know, I've got one star, two star military officers kind of suddenly on first name terms with me here, wanting to be my best friend. What's going on?
I bet you found that quite often while you were there, didn't you?
Yeah. From time to time, something would occur just to make me think, hang on a moment, why are these very, very senior people suddenly taking an interest in somebody like me, who frankly, you know, I mean, I retired at deputy director level, but right. At the time, I was not that senior, you know, and I thought, hang on, why have I got half of the kind of Air Force high command in and out of my office? there was, you know, something, exactly, you said it really well, you know, something. A light bulb went off in my head. Something like, hang on a moment. What is it about this that's right. So special? Something's going on here, and it's a little bit above and beyond the call of normal deity.
Well, I'm curious. Let's take, for example, the Cosford incident. Does that eventually, because of the time spans that has now transpired, does that go into, and once again, probably the wrong word, but into a dead file, or is it still open, and are you still getting witnesses coming forward?
Yes, I am. It's wow. Still, you know, it's like a police investigation. It's like a crime where there's no resolution. Effectively, this is an unresolved investigation. So just like a police case, like an unsolved murder,
right.
You can have people contact you years after the event with new evidence. And this is exactly the same. This is exactly the same. So we had a situation where, you know, people would come to us with new evidence. And you know, absolutely fascinating thing. Channel, one of our big national television channels, mm-hmm. did a documentary on this case about a year ago.
Okay.
And it was on live national television. And after, literally, during the program, in fact, I could hear, you know, my email, my computer was pinging, and people were... people emailing me and saying, look, I don't know whether, you know, this is relevant, but on, I think, that night, I saw something really strange. So, yeah, I received probably about 30 or 35 new first-hand witness accounts after that particular TV documentary on that case.
Incredible. I want to move into a couple of more areas that I understand you are fascinated by. And
sure.
There had to be a number of reports outside of the standard, if any UFO report could be considered standard. But besides the UFO reports, did you also have a number of reports come over your desk that dealt with abductions by mysterious means?
Yes. You simply cannot handle a sort of UFO sightings without finding yourself drawn into anything else weird and wonderful.
Right.
Even though it wasn't in my terms of reference, I found myself receiving reports of alien abductions, crop circles, cattle mutilations, anything out of the ordinary. It came to me simply because in government there was nowhere else, literally nowhere else to send it. Mm-hmm. So I found myself receiving these sorts of things. And to date, I guess I've received probably about 100 reports of so-called close encounters, alien abductions, things like that. Right. I don't know what to make of them. I honestly don't have any answers here.
Sure.
But, you know, consistently, I've received reports of these sorts of things, and I think there's something here worthy of study.
Right. Well, you mentioned crop circles. There seems to be, from what bit of research I've done, quite a few that seem to occur in the UK. Were these also a concern and interest of the MOD?
Yes, at first, and this is going to sound very, very funny, but at first the allegation was that these things were being caused by military helicopters. People literally thought that these things were caused by the downwash from military helicopters.
Sure.
And that was how the Ministry of Defence first got drawn into this mystery. A colonel in the Army Air Corps was phoned up by a farmer who let the military exercise over his land. And he said, "What on earth have you idiots been doing to my fields?" And literally, they had to go out there with helicopters and hover over the fields to show that you couldn't make these sorts of patterns. So that's how we first got drawn into the mystery. And it wasn't in my terms of reference. My terms of reference said nothing more than look at the UFO mystery. But inevitably, because my terms of reference said look at the UFO mystery, I was sort of told, well, anything else that doesn't quite fit into the normal scheme of things, normal parameters, anything weird and wonderful, you look at it. So I got drawn into that too. We very quickly ascertained that these things were not attributable to helicopters, but I didn't do a whole lot of research into it. As I say, it wasn't in my formal terms of reference.
Well, now, you used the term weird and wonderful, and that's pretty much where my next question is going to be going from. There seems to be a number of people, which include Barry Keane and James Casbolt, that have made claims that there are underground bases, including, I guess, at Peasemore, where a number of nefarious things and events seem to go on. What is your take on these claims, and do you perhaps personally know anything about these underground bases or heard anything about them?
I don't. In the British intelligence community, we have this wonderful phrase, and I don't know if the Americans use it too. They probably do. We have this wonderful phrase, interesting if true. And, so many times people say to me, have you heard of this? Do you know about that? And I say, well, interesting if true. And I'm afraid those sorts of stories about underground facilities and things totally fall into what I call the kind of interesting if true kind of parameter. I honestly have no knowledge about this.
Okay.
Maybe my security clearance wasn't high enough.
Right.
Maybe I just didn't have a need to know, but for whatever reason, I don't know anything about that, and right. I honestly can't really get into it.
This actually is an interesting sidebar. I guess that I'm sure that working in the department that you did, and considering also the subject matter, did you have to sign something like a non-disclosure act, or what I believe is also called the Official Secrets Act?
Yes, I did. I signed that. Absolutely, on my first day
really? In
government. So I signed that on, as best I recall, May the 8th, 1985. So that's going way back.
Yeah.
But yes, I absolutely signed that on my first day in government. And the convention is you sign it on your first day in government, and then you sign it again on your last day in government, which for me was 31st of October 2006, and it just reminds you that you're still bound by this for life. So I have indeed signed the Official Secrets Act. I've signed a non-disclosure agreement. But people say to me, well, how can you discuss UFOs?
Right.
And I say, well, don't you see Colin Powell on television discussing the situation in the Middle East? You know, as long as you don't disclose any classified information, you will see all the time former government and military personnel, you'll see former CIA officials, former DOD officials, former US Army officials discussing what they think is going to happen in Iraq, Afghanistan. And I say, my situation is no different from that. I worked for the government for 21 years, but as long as I don't disclose any classified information, I can talk about the work that I did. I can speculate about where things may go.
Have you ever felt threatened by your discussing some of these UFO reports?
No, I haven't. I feel I'm fairly robust. I feel, you know, that when people like Lord Hill Norton, who we mentioned a little earlier in the interview, but when a former chief of the defense staff and chairman of NATO's military committee, when someone like that speaks out and says, "I believe in UFOs,"
right.
When someone like that steps forward and speaks out, somebody like myself, at a much more junior level, when I speak out, I feel, well, you know, as long as someone like that has gone before me, I feel that's fine. You know,
right.
I don't have anything to worry about.
So in other words, because of this non-disclosure thing that you had to sign, it would be okay for you to possibly say something like, yes, there were many reports on a UFO coming down in the mountains, but you could not then follow that up and say, and we recovered the craft.
Yeah, I probably couldn't say that. I mean, I honestly, I say to you that we didn't have anything like that. If in Britain we had anything like that, I didn't know about it,
right.
And I wasn't cleared for it. I don't say it hasn't happened. Maybe Roswell involved an extraterrestrial craft. If it was, if it did, I wasn't briefed on that, and
sure.
I didn't have the security clearance. So all I can say is you know, I do think that the UFO issue raises serious defense and national security issues, but what I can't do for anyone is say, here's a smoking gun.
Right.
And, you know, that's it's irritating in a way, because some people kind of portray me as a disinformation agent because of that. But I
really?
Say, honestly, no, hand on heart, I'm not. I say, hand on heart, you know, if I knew something like this, I would probably say, I don't know, I'm not a whistleblower, but if I honestly knew that there was an extraterrestrial spacecraft in an Air Force hangar somewhere, I would probably say so, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's move over to an incident where there appeared to be a number of witnesses that did seem to view something unusual and from what I understand, may have even touched a craft or something. And I'm talking about the Rendlesham Force incident. And for some of our listeners that probably don't have a clue as to what I'm speaking about, over a series of nights in December 1980, perhaps you could fill them in with what you know about the Rendlesham Forest incident.
Sure. It's called the Rendlesham Forest incident, as you say. Sometimes in the U.S. it's known as the Bentwaters incident. But basically, in the early hours of 26th of December 1980, people saw what at first they thought was an aircraft accident. These were United States Air Force personnel from the military bases at Bentwaters and Woodbridge, United States Air Force bases in Britain, operated by the United States Air Force. And they thought an aircraft had crashed. They went out and they actually found not a crashed aircraft, but a landed object of some sort. Nobody has definitely said it was an extraterrestrial spacecraft.
Right.
But what they have said is it's sort of, you know, an object, an unknown craft. One of the witnesses got close enough to this thing to touch the side of it and see strange symbols etched on its hull. He likened them to Egyptian hieroglyphs. So this is an extraordinary, extraordinary incident. When they went to the landing site the day after, they found indentations in the ground. And this was the middle of winter. It was very, very cold. So something had pressed down very, very hard here. And there were three marks in a small clearing where this thing had come down. They plotted these out. They were the shape of a perfect equilateral triangle. And they took readings with the Geiger counter. And the Ministry of Defense's defense intelligence staff analyzed these this area. And they said, well, we don't know what happened here, but the radiation levels are 10 times normal. And an amazing thing about this is, please, for all the listeners, don't take my word for it. Go on to the Ministry of Defense's own website, mod.uk, type in Rendlesham, R-E-N-D-L-E-S-H-A-M, look at the file and look at the Defense Intelligence Staff's own assessment of this. Like I say, don't take my word for this. Look at what British intelligence said about the radiation readings here. You know, this is not me saying this. This is the British government. This is the Defense Intelligence Staff saying, yeah, something happened here, and the radiation levels are 10 times normal.
Now, from what I understand, wasn't there also a major or someone that actually was doing recordings while they were out there in the field?
Yes, indeed. The Deputy Base Commander, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt, on the second night of activity, he was at a kind of social function, and suddenly door burst open, and a young airman came up to him, and he saluted, and he said, "Sir, it's back." And Colonel Holt said, What are you talking about? What's back?" And this Air Force officer said, "Sir, the UFO is back." So Colonel Holt took a team out into the forest, and he took with him not just a Geiger counter, but a sort of handheld tape recorder. And yes, you can go onto the internet and you can type in Colonel Holt, which is H-A-L-T, tape or audio recording or whatever you like, and you'll find his tape recording. And it's very, it's interesting in a sense. It's actually quite scary, because here you've got a group of United States Air Force officers, highly trained military personnel, suddenly encountering something absolutely above and beyond their normal experience. And you can hear the kind of tension and fear in their voices as this UFO gets closer and closer.
Incredible. Want to ask you about something. There was an announcement that was made, I believe it was approximately about a year ago, that the MOD was going to be opening up its UFO files to the public. Has that happened, and has there been any information that has been released that kind of surprises you, or do you feel that maybe they're still holding back some significant incidences?
Well, this is a really interesting story, and it's just exploded again into the international media, literally, the last two or three days.
Really?
The British government has said, we are going to release all our UFO files. The French government did it earlier this year. They said, here's our entire archive, and they established a website which promptly crashed because of the you know, everyone logged on at once.
The traffic.
And the whole thing got taken down. But, you know, the British government said, yeah, we're going to do it. And literally, I think on 21st of December, and I've been staying alongside this story, but they said, yeah, okay, now here's the time scale for this. We have 160 files. We are going to release them one at a time, starting in spring 2008, and we're going to kind of go and release the oldest files first, so those date back to the 1970s, and yeah, that's what we're going to do. So I very, very much commend the Ministry of Defence's decision on this. This is an absolutely massive story. You know, it's very, very important that the British government releases this information. You're not going to find a smoking gun. You're not going to find sort of, you know, dead aliens in an Air Force hangar anywhere. But you are going to find all sorts of absolutely fascinating cases involving UFOs tracked on radar, seen by military personnel, etc., etc.
Right.
So this is a massive, massive story.
And so where, again, could our listeners go to access those files?
Well, there are two places. The first place is the Ministry of Defence's website, which is literally just mod.uk. And then once you get on that, you can put in the keyword UFO as a search term. The other place you can go is the National Archives. And again, just search on the National Archives and Britain, and you'll find that. But also, I will try and keep people updated on this story. So if you go to my website, nickpope.net, I will try to keep people updated on the latest twists and turns of this story.
Do you think, Nick, that the MOD was pressured into doing this, or do you think it may also be part of a acclimation process to get the world used to the fact that we might not be alone?
Well, I think when the French government earlier this year disclosed their UFO files, I think inevitably that put pressure on the British government, and people said, well, hang on a moment. You know, the UK and France are fairly close allies. If Britain, if France has disclosed their files, isn't it time for Britain to release theirs? So I think there's a certain degree of kind of encouragement there. But you know, I think that there's a kind of head of steam building up, as it were.
Right.
France have disclosed their files. Other countries, such as Italy and Brazil, have released their files. Britain has said and is in the process of releasing its files. So we're getting there. We really are getting there, I think.
And over in the corner, the wallflower, the United States of America, is saying, nope, don't think so.
Well, that's the interesting thing, because the more other countries like France and Britain say, okay, this is everything we've got. We don't know what this mystery is, but it is a mystery, and here are some of our most amazing cases, and here are the files, and here's where you can get access to the information. As long as that happens, and it will probably put pressure on the United States government. I'm not accusing the United States government of a cover-up, but you know, once Britain and France says, here's our stuff, I think inevitably the spotlight will turn on America, and people will say, well, okay, you know, this is what they've done, this is what they know, what do you know?
So what today is kind of piquing your interest? I mean, there's numerous UFO reports that are going through the UFO community. Are there one or two that have really piqued your interest lately?
Yes, there's an absolute, I mean, one of the most fascinating cases is a UFO sighting involving a pilot called Ray Bowyer. And this case occurred on, gosh, I'm trying to remember the date, I think 23rd of April 2007. This was a case where a civil pilot here in the United Kingdom saw a UFO, and he said, gosh, this thing looks to be over a mile wide. And he said, hey, hang on, it seems to be appearing on the radar as well.
Hmm.
So UFO cases don't get much better than that.
I mean,
a civil pilot, radar, over a mile wide, the investigation is still going on into this, but Ray Bowyer was one of the people who spoke out at the event at the National Press Club on November the 12th, 2007. And this was absolutely unprecedented event where a number of people with backgrounds in government, military, intelligence, spoke out and said, look, we don't know what the UFO phenomenon is. We have no idea. But right. we think it raises serious defense and national security issues. Therefore, we think it should be studied, and we think maybe the American government should reopen something like Project Blue Book, the former United States Air Force UFO research program.
Right.
So there's been a lot going on recently.
Yeah. We have a number of questions here from our members, and I have to apologize to a lot of our listeners and members alike that a lot of the questions that you folks have submitted, guess what? Nick has already answered those questions in one way, shape, or form, so obviously I won't be asking those questions. But Nick, here's a few questions from our members.
Okay, I'll try and go through these quickly so we can kind of get to everyone.
Okay.
And apologies if, you know, yeah. Let's go for this.
All right. One member wants to know, he'd like me to ask Mr. Pope if he has seen any UFOs as intriguing as the March 1993 case that he worked on, and does he believe in his own mind that the March 1993 sighting was E.T. in nature? And I guess he's talking about the Cosford incident.
Yes. The question is indeed about the Cosford incident. The honest answer is that I don't know if that was extraterrestrial or not. I can honestly say that it was absolutely above and beyond anything in the United Kingdom government experience. So we had no conventional explanation for it. You can read, if the questioner hasn't seen the file in its entirety, it's on the MOD's website, mod.uk. Just put in Cosford and have a look. It's unexplained. We don't know whether it was extraterrestrial or not. The only other case in Britain, to answer the question, that I think comes close to that is the Rendlesham Forest incident, which,
right.
again, we've discussed, and which is on the MOD's website.
Another member asked this question. I'm sure this is a question you hear all the time. And this question is, have you ever witnessed firsthand a UFO or alien encounter?
I haven't. It's very sad and unfortunate. I would love to have seen or experienced something myself, but sadly I haven't. In a sense, you know, I think that helps, because in my official research and investigation, I can say that I've come across these things, seen them tracked on radar, spoken to pilots who've seen them, but because I haven't seen anything myself, in a sense, I'm one step removed from it, and maybe that's advantageous in a way,
right?
In terms of my credibility and speaking out about this, because people say, well, you know, he doesn't have any particular agenda here.
Well,
but no, I haven't seen it.
Excuse me.
I would love to, but I haven't seen anything myself.
Well, speaking of agenda, of course, we have, you know, our website, which is at www.abovetopsecret.com. We deal with conspiracies quite often, and so I would imagine that a lot of these questions would probably have a conspiratorial side to it, and this is absolutely one of them, since you mentioned agenda. This one member wants to know, do you have an agenda? I mean, what is your reason for speaking out? Who on earth is paying you now?
Well, I left government last year after 21 years, and now I do a lot of, basically what I do, how I earn my living, as it were, is I'm a freelance journalist. I write about UFOs for various national newspapers. I do some publicity work and things like that. But I have no, you know, honestly, I hand on heart, I have no agenda as such. I'm not pushing any particular line, but I do believe that the UFO issue raises serious defense and national security issues, and, you know, I will write about that fairly regularly in the media. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Another member wants to know, do you think that our society is ready for disclosure?
Yes, I do. I mean, I don't know that there's anything to disclose. And again, hand on heart, I can't sort of say, yeah, okay, this is the extraterrestrial reality here, and you know, this is the way it is. But we're pretty big, and we're pretty grown up, and yeah, I think we're ready for just about anything.
Another member, which kind of ties into this, actually they asked the same question, but they added a follow-up, which would be, what would we expect from the actual disclosure bit, and would there be any implications of that disclosure?
Well, I think what we would probably see, certainly what we would want to see, would be an information exchange.
Right.
So if we got into a sort of situation where we had disclosure and where we had absolutely sort of open situation, we would want to say, well, okay, from a technological point of view, what's the secret of interstellar travel? How in terms of physics can we do that?
Right.
And that's the bottom line, frankly. We want the technology.
Sure. And, you know, I just want to ask this on a personal note. Do you think that we may have that kind of technology where we can already go beyond the type of propulsion systems that we have?
I honestly don't think so, because I don't think astronauts would be kind of struggling and dying and you know, kind of faffing around with fairly low technology trips, you know, to the moon and such like. I think if we genuinely had that technology now, we would be doing star missions, and we're not, you know. Well, some of your listeners will probably say, yeah, well, maybe we are, but we're covering it up. But,
right.
You know, I've worked for the government for 21 years, and sort of I sort of know that the way that this goes in terms of astronauts being people who are Air Force people, who are therefore effectively government people, you know, I honestly do not think we would be faffing around with kind of moon missions and space shuttle missions if we really genuinely had interstellar travel now.
You mentioned moon missions and the moon in itself. I had a private email that came to me. There is a gentleman by the name of John Lear who has claims that we have been on the moon and mining it for quite some time, and they wanted to know if you had heard of that and what your thoughts were on that.
I don't know anything about that. I mean, I'm tempted to say, like, that's probably a question for someone like Gordon Cooper or Egan Mitchell.
Right.
You know, I honestly, I don't know the answer to that. If it's true, obviously, I'm out of the loop. I don't think I'm out of the loop, so I suspect that this sort of thing is mistaken. But like I say, maybe that's a question more for people like Edgar Mitchell and Gordon Cooper.
I have one final question from one of our members, and that is this, and I'm sure here again, you get asked this quite a bit. With all the knowledge that you have, Mr. Pope, and if you had the chance to do this, would you volunteer and meet an alien?
What a brilliant question. That's a brilliant question. The answer is absolutely yes. I think, you know, I couldn't walk away from this. I really couldn't. I would absolutely ask a question. And I guess my question would be, and this is so kind of naughty in a way, people will say, oh, it's just his government training kicking in. But it would be a very practical question in a sense. I would say, what is the physics behind interstellar travel? How can we do this? That would be my question, because I don't want, you know, us to be studying UFOs and sort of saying, hey, isn't this incredible? These people can travel beyond the stars. I want us to travel beyond the stars. I want the human adventure not to end here on Earth, but to go on and on. I would want to say, how can we do that? How can we ensure that our destiny doesn't, you know, finish here, you know, in some sort of muddy puddle? How can we ensure that the human adventure begins on Earth but ends among the stars?
Nick, I can't thank you enough for spending the time that you have with us here and for our members and listeners of AboveTopSecret.com. We want to remind our friends that Nick has a website located at www.nickpope.net. And he also has some books there if you are interested in finding out more information. Open Skies, Closed Minds, Operation Thunderchild, The Uninvited, and Operation Lightning Strike. And those are all available through your website. Is that correct, sir?
Absolutely, spot on.
Nick, if something else comes up in the future that is phenomenal, would you please come back and let our listeners know?
Absolutely. It's been an honor speaking to you and your listeners. I very much enjoyed this interview, and let's do it again.
Oh, great. Good deal. Tell you what, stay on the phone just for a second while I do my closer here. Hey, listen, friends, once again, we want to remind you that we've got some great stuff coming up in the 2008 season, so make sure that you come back and check us out often. On behalf of the ATS Mix, I am Johnny Anonymous. We'll catch you next time.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat.